through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number three of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. I'm fired up for this free agent draft profile because this is a guy who just a couple of years ago was a huge name, a guy who we had big expectations for in 2019. And then, of course, the suspension came around. We were willing to wait until after that was over, and things just never materialized for him later in the season. Of course, we're talking about free agent Jaron Reed.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy's off-season profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run in 2020.
Let's go!
Contract extension profile.
Jaron Reed, 2016 second round pick for the Seattle Seahawks from Alabama. At 6'3", 306 pounds, the Seahawks drafted Jaron Reed because of his unique leadership on that defense, his unique run-stopping ability. And Jaron Reed coming into the league as a rookie, as a second-year player, fit that bill. He did a great job in both of those roles of stopping the run and being a solid presence on that defensive line. Then you saw this huge spike in productivity in 2018 where he got 10.5 sacks, 50 tackles, 12 TFLs, 24 QB hits, this explosion of a year for him where it looked like Jaron Reed was going to be a dominant defensive tackle in this league. Young, promising player. 2019 rolls around, Jaron Reed is playing for his contract, playing for contract extension, and then early on gets hit at age 27, final year in his deal with a 6-game suspension due to some off-the-field issues. And with Jaron Reed, that did not serve him well from that point. Then once he came back and he started 10 games after that, in those 10 games, Jaron Reed did not live up to the same productivity of 2018. He had 2 sacks, 27 tackles, 0 tackle for loss, 0 TFLs, and 8 quarterback hits. So that production, it's not even, you look at most of those stats, it's not even half of what he produced the following year, and he played more than half of the season despite that suspension. Jaron Reed is a very talented young player in this league. He's a guy that I think when he hits the open market, a lot of teams are going to be interested in him, but it's determining whether Jaron Reed is actually this dominant defensive tackle in the league that can be a good run stopper, that can be a pass rusher, or is he what he has shown for 3 out of the 4 years, that he's primarily a pretty good run stopper, doesn't really generate much of a pass rush, and you would be significantly overpaying him if you tried to pay him as top market guys like Aaron Donald, Fletcher Cox, Grady Jarrett, Geno Atkins, who are Marcell Dareus, who are all getting $14 to $22 million in that range for all those names that I just said. Jaron Reed more fits along the lines of the $8 to $10 million in terms of how young he is, how he has shown flashes of talent and ability in this league to be a star, and no other opportunity showed that than in cut number one, where he got after Jimmy Garoppolo in the San Francisco 49ers game that resulted in a strip sack, a fumble that was returned for a touchdown.
Coleman empties out to the right side wide. Empty backfield for Garoppolo, who stands strong. Gets hit. Ball is out. Ball is picked up. Clowney goes the other way. He's in. Touchdown, Seahawks. Garoppolo fumbles the ball. Reed forces it with a sack. Strips the ball. And Clowney, I hope he's got in his contract money for points, his second touchdown on the season.
In 2018, you saw Jaron Reed and Frank Clark get after the quarterback, get after the passer on a consistent basis. You saw very small flashes of that with Jaron Reed, and when it was combined with Jadeveon Clowney, man, did it look cool. It was a lot of fun watching that and hopeful to what it can be, but it never was consistent throughout this year. And Pete Carroll talking about the type of year Jaron Reed had.
He never really got started, you know, rushing the passer like he was flying last year, and you know, wasn't able to be as productive, you know, just numbers-wise. He's still a really good football player and means a lot to this team and really tough and, you know, a terrific player, all-around player. But the numbers, you know, he had 10.5 sacks last year that they didn't, you know, they couldn't get him going that this year. I think that has to do with, because he's an inside guy, plays like he plays, he needs the support around him to open up the rush lanes and things like that, and we weren't able to help him enough.
It's interesting that Pete Carroll says that as I'm hearing that, because for Jaron Reed, to me, how I interpret that is Jaron Reed is a guy who's trying to get as much money as he possibly can in this contract. He wants to get significantly paid. I do believe, though, when Jaron Reed hits the open market, it's going to be hard for him, and it's going to be a little bit of humble pie when he gets to the open market, because the reality is you can't be a flash in the pan guy and get this type of contract. He's got 3 years working against him instead of that one great year. And when I hear Pete Carroll say that he's an interior guy, we needed to do more to help him, he had Clowney. Clowney was there. Clowney was taking up double teams, and I think Pete Carroll trying to do Jaron Reed a solid there. But Jaron Reed saw a lot of one-on-one opportunities on the interior, and he did not take advantage of them in the same way that he did the year prior. So with Jaron Reed, to me, he's a guy that I would love to have around because I know he can be productive. He's a leader on this team. He's a guy that can, you know, be a great run stopper. He has pass rush ability, and it would bring continuity to that defensive line. But ultimately, it's all about the price tag, and if the price tag becomes too high, it becomes past that $10 million mark or even $8 million, it's going to be very hard for the Seattle Seahawks to feel good about signing him back.
Any chance this works to their advantage? The fact that he had a bad year last year, any chance that works to their advantage, maybe keeping the price tag down?
It absolutely does.
Right.
I think the only reason why you have a chance to get Jaron Reed back is because his year went the way it did in 2019, because he served the suspension, because there was lack of production. There wasn't as many flashes of what you saw. It'd be one thing if he came back and, okay, his stats didn't, you know, exactly replicate what 2019 was, but you could give him the excuse that, oh, well, it's because he had a six-game suspension. He was nowhere near that productivity and that pass rush ability that he displayed the year before. So I think this drastically helps the Seahawks in terms of their chances to sign him back.
It helps maybe to lower the price tag and sign him back, but at the end of the day, he didn't perform. If he performed well last year, guess who that would have helped? Jadeveon Clowney.
It would have, yeah.
Right? Imagine the two of them both performing well. I mean, that right there could have been the difference between them advancing in the playoffs and not. So,
absolutely.
I guess we can face forward and say, all right, we'll just, you know, leave that in the past and take it for what it is. But, I mean, that's what his lack of productivity last year cost them, in my opinion. Now, if that ends up keeping the price tag down going forward, I still believe in him. I think he can still be a great player. So if it, what'd you say, $8 to $10 million for that position?
Probably,
say,
yeah.
We'll just say it ends up being $8 million. That worth it?
I mean,
I think it is.
It could be a short-term deal for Reed, too, because Reed's still incredibly young. He's coming off of his rookie deal. It might be something where he thinks that not having his suspension to start the year and that throwing him off, and maybe hoping that there's a better defensive line around him in 2020, that maybe he comes back on a short-term deal and performs and produces numbers that are more similar to that 2018 season, and then all of a sudden he's looking at a much better deal on the market. So would he sign like a one-year deal? I don't know. He might feel, unfortunately for him, he might feel like no contract offer that he sees on the open market is what he feels he's worth because of that off year in 2019. It might be in his interest to sign a shorter deal with Seattle, and that could be an example of where you see Seattle retaining him. Is
like
right,
a bet on myself deal?
Well, like a bet on myself deal, because he's still very young. And if I'm a player, I always want long-term security, and I always want a longer deal. But there is a potential that you could come back and have a much better season than you did short six games due to your suspension, and then you have to get started, and you're not in football shape, and you know it takes a while to get rolling, and you can prove that, no, I'm still that guy, and now I have a chance to test the market again for a lot more than $10 million a year.
It was interesting what Pete said there, too, about the Seahawks not being able to help Reed out, right, because there was not the players around him weren't necessarily pulling their weight. I mean, you could make the same excuse for Clowney. You can make the same excuse for really anybody, because I mean, even say like a Puna Ford or Jefferson or whoever. Who was the other guy they have on the defensive line?
Ziggy Ansah.
Well, he was hurt.
Rasheem Green.
Sure.
L.J. Collier.
Well, he was out.
I mean, the guys they have under contract.
Oh, he was,
but what
he was there.
Is, yes. It's a musical chairs of guys that they weren't putting in a great position because no one was performing well.
No one was performing well, and no one really... You know, I would say Clowney was extremely disruptive, and I thought he had a very good year for himself. Obviously, you would love to see, you know, him perform at the level he did against the San Francisco 49ers the first time around every single game, but that's a little unrealistic. But he did produce a lot of disruption and it commanded a lot of attention. And
how come that didn't help the other guys?
It should have. And that's why I point to Jaron Reed. I think Pete Carroll was kind of helping him out a little bit by saying what he did, because I don't think that's true necessarily, that if you're pairing Jaron Reed on the same side as Clowney, you're going to get one-on-one opportunities, and he didn't capitalize on them, and he was not the same player in 2019 as he was in 2018. Does it mean that he can't come back in 2020 and, you know, respond in that way and get back to that production? But I do believe that it helps the Seahawks in the possibility of keeping him around for at least one more year, maybe signing him to a longer year deal, and that would be advantageous for the Seahawks to try and keep that continuity at least between Clowney and Reed. But if it's between Reed and Clowney, I'm taking Clowney every single time. I don't even think twice about it, and I'm going to try and figure out how I can fill out the rest of my defensive line from there. But Clowney is the guy that I'm absolutely going to, you know, take in that situation.
If
but
it comes down to
one-on-one,
great
to have Reed.
Right.
Does it really ever come down to one-on-one, though? I mean, $60 million worth of cap space.
It might if they end up having to... So if they re-sign, if they're able to re-sign Clowney, say that it's like a $19 million cap hit for 2020, but that it averages like, I don't know, $22 million a year or whatever. So say that you bring him on for $21, $22 million a year. So you still have 40 some odd million in cap space. You still have to use your money on your draft picks. Don't forget that. You still have 4, 5, 6, however many contracts you have down the road. Those aren't going to be very big. So Reed's contract was like 4 years and or $4 million or something like that. They aren't usually huge contracts, but you still have to use that money there. So you have to look at, you could still be spending $11, $12, $13 million on another edge rusher. Then do you want a lineman? Do you, you know, you already have now 5.5 at least for Olsen. So that $59-60 million they have in cap space is a lot, but I think it's very realistic that it could come down to choosing between, do you retain Reed or do you re-sign Clowney and add another edge rusher? I think that's a real possibility they could be in.
In your scenario there, you've already re-signed Clowney though, right? So
yes.
That leaves however many dollars for Reed and for, we'll say, another edge rusher that you want to sign or whoever. But there's really not much beyond that I think you're going to spend big money on.
Well, that's why I think people are advocating for drafting an edge rusher if you can do it. Obviously, you still have a project there, but you're paying significantly less if you draft an edge rusher. Difference is that you have to count on him contributing right away.
Yeah, I mean, they tried that last... Well, wait, you say drafting or
drafting.
Signing? Okay.
Drafting.
I was going to say, they tried signing one last year with Ziggy Ansah.
I mean, it's a difference in like $10-plus million, but are you more confident that you could bring in, you know... a guy, it's not going to be this guy, but a guy like Chris Jones to be on your line? He would obviously be more on the interior, but to contribute right away? Or, you know, are you going to take your chances with your 27th or 26th overall pick and see what you get there?
Well, a place that they have not been very good at, and a place that you're not necessarily going to find a lot of freakishly elite defensive end talent there.
I mean, there's a lot of gambling.
It doesn't mean that you can't. Doesn't mean you can't find a guy. It doesn't mean you can't find the guy that they have wanted and scouted and feel great about. But I just don't feel good about drafting a defensive end at this point and that spot unless they are over the moon about who comes their way. I would rather them go for the sure thing, which is that those, you know, pass rushers that are on the open market in this free agency class.
NFL headlines. This is quite the headline yesterday, guys. Former Browns offensive tackle Greg Robinson arrested with 156.9 pounds of weed at the was it the Canadian border?
That is so many pounds.
Mexico, El Paso.
What are you doing?
156.9 pounds of weed.
Do we know which way he was going? Like, was he going into Mexico?
Was he coming? Based off my reading of the police report, he was going into Mexico. He had this Uber driver from Louisiana pick him up at LAX and say, "You're going to drive me back to Louisiana." But then they got arrested at the border. So that to me means they were going into Mexico. I was confused.
Huh.
They got right up to the border and then, yeah.
I guess if you're carrying that kind of weight.
Maybe he picked it up on the way. Just a little quick drive-by, you know?
Yeah.
A little drive-through. I don't know about that.
He had been in California picking it up. The cops had his phone, and there was a contact saved as indoor grow house.
You know, it's
texting him saying, "Where are you? Are you there? Where are you? Are you there?"
I don't think that doesn't look like weed.
Jeez. I mean, this is a guy that was a former first-round pick. A total bust, but this is a guy that also made a lot of money in his career. How do you... I just don't understand this. This is insane.
It's also just... you didn't even want to get like 30 pounds at a time. I'm not advocating for drug trafficking at all. You shouldn't be doing it or whatever he was doing, buying in bulk, whatever. I do buy in bulk a lot now that I think about it, but... I don't know that I would get that much at once. That's more than some human people weigh.
But it just makes me wonder how long he's been doing this, because when you get to the point, there's no way this is his first time doing this. If you're hauling that much, this has got to be like your 10th time doing this, don't you think? Like, it's little by little, you're just getting more and more and more and more. You're getting more cocky. Like, if this was the first time he did it, wow, you're going big, man.
So, Kyle, you got an Uber driver?
Stuff, man.
An Uber driver was there with him? Because if you're the Uber driver, you're like, am I getting 5 stars for this? Or this is a big risk.
It was some Uber driver he liked to use in Louisiana. It was like, hey, I'm going to fly you to L.A. and then you're going to drive us back. Then, right as they approach the border, Robinson tells this Uber driver, hey, man, you look kind of tired. My buddy's going to take over and he's going to drive. Then they get stopped at the border and like, hey, pull over, further investigation. We need to sniff your car, whatever. And Robinson says the Uber driver, hey, man, I'll pay you to take this.
Whoa!
And the Uber driver's like, take what? What do you mean? And he's like, there's 160 pounds of pot in the back. And he's like, oh, my, what? Let me out of the car!
Could you imagine being that guy? That would be horrifying.
And he said, no, you will not pay me. I will not take this. This is your problem, dude.
Jeez.
Why did they have to cross the border?
I don't get rid of it? Sell it, I guess? I don't know.
This is a fantastic point. Someone saying, like, El Paso is the border town with so many checkpoints.
That's the one you're going to choose?
It's not like you've got this great devised plan. It's an Uber driver. I can't imagine the car is, you know, fancy. It's probably like some Prius of some sort. Maybe it's an Uber XL. I don't know.
It was a rented car.
Oh, a rented
Greg
car.
Greg Robinson had rented and then was having this Uber driver drive for him.
Gotcha.
It takes a lot of cargo space to hold 157 tons.
I am ready for this Uber driver's memoir, though.
It's not going to cram that into a Prius now, Jake.
No, yeah. Come on, man.
I mean, whatever it was, he did not think this one through.
Will the NFL Combine make for good primetime TV?
I mean, I'm a football fanatic, so I'll be watching. I'll be excited about it.
What's your favorite event at the Combine?
The 40.
The 40 is always really fun.
The weigh-in?
40 is a crowd pleaser.
40 is great. It's like an Olympic sport, basically.
The weigh-ins are weird. I kind of wish they would not do those.
I wish. Yeah, it's very strange.
Weird tone to that one.
Russell told me a story about his weigh-in experience because they do height and weight.
Yeah.
And they... you know, they've got all the scouts in this giant room, and when Russell went up there, I mean, similar to what Kyler Murray did, but Russell actually measured shorter than what, you know, people were anticipating. And as soon as he got his measurement called out, he could hear all the whispers of all the scouts and everybody talking about him. It's like, could you imagine?
That's how I was going to compare it to myself. That's very selfish.
Ridiculous.
Didn't you say that when you did a measurement for something, you were able to keep your shoes, so you like added?
Yes. I didn't go to the Combine.
It was like a senior day, at my pro day.
At my pro day, they measured us for our height. And what they do when they measure you for your height, they have you lean back They have you put, you are measuring on your heels. So your toes are up and you're on your heels because they're trying to make you as short as possible. That's not how human people stand. I don't understand it. But so they're trying to knock you down. And I was like, okay, I see you. I'm gonna beat this.
I'm gonna beat the system.
So I wore black socks and I doubled up on my Dr. Scholl's.
They didn't check.
Heavy padding on the heel.
Yet another example of Jake gaming the system. The parking pass, and now this.
Yeah, so when Greg Robinson is probably crossing the border, that's how I was feeling as I was. That's my comparison.
Were you sweating bullets?
Yeah, I was sweating bullets as I was walking up there.
Steel inserts.
Man, if I get caught with these...
It's game over
for me.
Game over.
Go big or go home, but I got what I wanted.
I like the part where they check the body fat with that little thing that pinches your skin.
Oh, gosh, that's so horrible.
I don't want to do
that
one.
It's the worst.
Oh. Here comes a little crab claw.
The fact that they yell it out is so weird.
And that
weird.
Thing hurts, man. Like they, like,
it does.
They, like, I don't know. They think, like, if you, like, grab the fat and you, like, shake on it a little bit, they're going to be able
that.
To get more.
No. And then they yell it out to the crowd, and scouts that have had only Doritos for 5 days roll their eyes and talk about how out of shape you are.
They just shame you. And you just, it's the worst feeling in the world.
5'10 and 3/4. Oh, my God. That's not what I was expecting.
Bringing up a lot of horrifying memories.
Hey, do you guys remember the days when the Seahawks just basically used to rob the Minnesota Vikings? Like, we got Sidney Rice. We got Percy Harvin.
Nate Burleson out of there.
Weren't there a couple
that
other
continued.
Players?
Shamar Stephen.
Remember Tom?
No. Shamar Stephen and Tom Johnson. They didn't. They cut him to try to make room on the roster and do a little roster maneuver, and then he did a bit of a double dip, and he signed back with the Vikings.
We interviewed him in that interim. He was a... I'd love talking to him.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the reason why I bring that up, Everson Griffin voided the final 3 years of his deal. He's going to hit free agency. He did play for Pete Carroll at USC. Any chance he ends up here?
Yeah, there's a great chance that he could end up here. Now, I there is part hesitation on my end for Everson Griffin, just because, one, I don't know if they're going to be able to pull that off with him in particular, because I still think that he's a very good player that can command a lot of money from other teams, even at his age. But he is a great pass rusher. He's a very good run stopper. He would be an ideal guy to go and grab in this market, you know, for, you know, a 2-year deal, so to speak. I would really, really like him here along with Jadeveon Clowney. There's some other great options, but yeah, Griffin makes a lot of sense.
There's one reason, as I'm thinking about it over the course of the day, why the players should like the extra postseason game. We'll talk about that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
All right, let's leave this 17th game of the year aside for a second, because we just read a tweet from Tom Pelissero that didn't make a ton of sense to me. Let's just talk about adding postseason games here. If you're the 2 seed or the 7th seed and you now have to play that extra wild card game, wouldn't you be okay doing that if you knew you had an extra postseason game check coming? Isn't postseason money higher?
I mean, sure. I would want, no matter what, a better shot at
tonight. Turn it up with 11.
Is it me?
That was me.
Oh. I would want...
it wasn't me personally. That was ESPN.com's standings page.
Got it. I would want, no matter what, a shot at the Super Bowl. And if I'm this year's Super Bowl champion, the Chiefs were number 2 seed.
Yeah.
I don't want to play an extra wild card game. I want a bye week.
Right. And also, that money that they get paid in the playoffs, it's less than it's capped. They don't get the same amount of money that they do during the regular season. So
they get more though, don't they, for the postseason?
No, their contract that they have, their game check that they get during the season, it does not go up. It does not bump up
for the postseason.
It is capped at a certain spot. So, you know, like in the preseason, players aren't, you know, making much at all. In the preseason, star players, regular, you know,
but
guys who are trying to make the roster.
Money.
Yeah, but not, I mean, not like, I think my check was for, it was like $1,000, $2,000 for the game in the preseason.
No. What I mean is, if you're playing in the postseason and you're the seventh seed, that's another, it's still another game check as opposed to not getting one.
True. Yes. Very true. And for those types of situations, it would be a bonus for those players. But, I mean, I just think that the reward that you're proposing is not worth the player safety or the player risk that these guys are going to endure, and knowing that these owners are making hand and fist in these situations, it just does not add up. Like, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever why the players would sign
off.
Yeah,
I feel like
this.
The proposal that we're seeing is very, I'm very curious to know what the players, and I know nothing's been agreed upon yet, but I'm very curious to know what the players have campaigned for and that they're receiving in return outside of just that bump in total revenue share. And I am curious to know how far along these negotiations really are. Because you look at some of the representatives, the player representatives, like Richard Sherman doesn't seem especially pleased by this. He retweeted Quandre Diggs saying 50-50 split in revenue. He doesn't seem super pumped. And I would guess he's not alone.
This whole belief or this conversation that this CBA is close is absolute garbage.
Well, who thinks that it is?
That's what the owners are pushing. The owners are pushing the narrative, and that's what we've seen from a ton of different media outlets, national media outlets, that this is close, that the NFL owners have approved this.
On the other side, that we haven't heard anything.
Yes, that's true. But the fact that we're talking about the playoff, you know, schedule is going to change in 2020 when that's part of the CBA is telling. Like, this is already being written about, or like, here are the changes, here's what we're looking at now, right? And it hasn't been agreed upon.
Adam Schefter, when he tweeted out last night about this whole thing, it was not under the premise that this was, hey, this is a proposal and this is what's going to potentially happen and the players still have to approve it, all of this. It was pretty much tweeted out like this was going to happen. So, you know, everybody was talking about, you know, how this was going to be and what this was going to provide and, you know, how this was going to be split. So this conversation was very much, I think, by the owner saying that, hey, we want to try and pressure. We want to try and get this, you know, motion going where we can get the fans on board with this so that there's a ton of pressure on the players to sign now. And I don't think that the players looking at this now are going to even be close to signing this. I mean, from what we're reading now, did we say now what the latest reports have been?
As far as
Tom Pelissero saying that the 17th game, if they signed the contract, it would not basically under proposed CBA, it would be an extra game check capped at $250,000. So every player in that 17th game is not getting an extra game check of which is the same amount of their current contract, that they would be taking a pay cut if you're some of those star players. Actually, every player would be taking
every
a pay
player
cut.
Every player right now.
Every player would be taking a pay cut to play in this Week 17 game.
Because
that
doesn't make sense. Right, paying them according to a 16-game schedule.
Which is like, so the owners don't want to
pay them for the extra game? Well, you know what? I want to go back to a point you just made here about Adam Schefter and him and the owners using him to drum up public support for this. I'm going to read a tweet from him from last night. NFL playoff structure is about to be changed. Under the current CBA proposal, 7 teams from each conference will make the playoffs with only one bye per conference, sources tell ESPN. It would go into effect this upcoming season. That sounds like it's going to happen.
Yeah. Yes.
Exactly. And that was
NFL playoff structure is about to be changed. That's the first sentence of the tweet. Why does he include that?
Well, and even if a guy like Adam Schefter is assuming the deal will be done because he feels like the NFL owners have so much collective power that he just thinks this is a done deal, it's still a leading statement.
It is. He needs to realize how much power somebody in his position wields.
I think he does.
Okay, so you're saying he tweets this out intentionally?
I think he knows how much power he has.
Okay, so you think he writes those leading statements intentionally?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, then shame on him.
Yeah, I think that he does. And maybe Adam Schefter was given false information from the standpoint of where this thing actually was going. Because I do think that this was a narrative that the owners have been pushing out there. And we have not, as things are going across, we're getting more and more information slowly but surely as everyone is trying to dig and try and find out more information. But as we were initially hearing this last night and earlier today, that everything was great and that this was a perfect match made in heaven, the players are going to get what they want, the owners are going to get what they want, how great is this? And now we're finding out these little things about, you know, the deal, and it just doesn't make any sense for the players while they still have 10 months left on their CBA deal to cave in now.
It's stuff that matters. Sense. Week 17, think of week 16 and what it meant. Think of that game between the 49ers and Seahawks in week 16. How important week 16 is for so many teams around the league. That decides playoff seeding. It decides division opponents. It decides whether or not you get a bye week. That would be week 17, hypothetically, of this upcoming, 2021.
It'd be week 18
if that were to be decided, but game 17. You're telling me I get like less than half my game check for that? For the most important game of the season, I'm getting paid less? That seems weird.
That's player minimum.
That's weird.
Do you think the owners would budge on that?
No, I think that the owners want to make as much money as they possibly can. And the perception that the owners are taking in this money because it's this mom and pop shop that you're running on your own and you've got to pay the gardener however much to take care of the stadium grass.
But
that's
not
what's really happening. It's making money so you don't have to pay for your own stadium.
But it's not in the owner's interest to lock out the players and not have a season either. If the players come back at them and say, all right, you guys want X, Y, and Z, here's what we want as a response to that. They've got to be willing to negotiate a little.
That's true, but I think the owners benefit from being a somewhat invisible group, and they benefit from pushing a narrative that players are selfish for wanting more money.
They can try that all they want.
I think it works for some people. I think there are people that think that.
You know what? They may. At the end of the day, I don't think the fans care which way this thing goes between labor and management. I think all they care about is how their product is affected. Like, if there's football on in 2020 and 2021, et cetera, I think that the fans are fine with that. Whether or not the owners are trying to drum up support for themselves via Adam Schefter, I mean, that's just a minor, minor part of how all this goes. I don't think it really matters all that much. We sum it up next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
I've got a really weird sum it up today. I apologize to my producer ahead of time.
Oh, no.
Oh, you do now? You didn't earlier.
What?
Oh, that was the apology.
I'm apologizing to you for what I'm about to say, because it's not sports related.
Here we go.
Get ready, Kyle.
It's educational, though. And it's, well, we'll see. Do you guys know who Larry Tesler is?
No.
Larry Tesler passed away today. We just got word of his death about an hour ago. Larry Tesler is the inventor.
Oh, I know this.
Of copy, cut, and paste functions. And also the original interface for the Macintosh, which is like essentially what we still use now, or we use like a version of it. Can you imagine going through life being the inventor of something that obvious but sort of obscure at the same time?
Well, and like, not the average person might not know. So I'd be like, I'd be at the grocery stores like, do you know who I am?
Right.
Do you even know?
Do you know who I am?
Who you're speaking to?
Have you ever used a Post-it? That was me.
I would walk around like a computer library while people are copy and pasting. I'd be like, you're welcome.
Walk around. That was me.
Was that a control V I just saw?
Oh. I respect your move to do the copy and paste, sir.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Keep going. I would, that's probably what I would do if I was in his position.
It's such a strange thing to be responsible for, but
yeah.
I mean, thanks, Larry.
That's awesome.
I love those functions.
Yeah. You know what? Thank you, Larry.
It's like, there's a lot of those things where it's like, gosh, why didn't I think of that? Or I was alive, you know, born too late, because, you know, obviously I would have thought of something like that.
Yeah, you would have thought of copy and paste.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
never know. I mean, there's little things. Like, I could have invented Dunkaroos, I feel like, if given the time
hey,
and
by
the resources.
Way, how come I texted you guys the actual commercial for Dunkaroos
no,
about a
didn't.
Week ago?
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. And
no,
none
you
of
did
you,
it, Tom.
None of you responded. I was so mad.
I'm going to respond right
now. I thought it was better
now.
When you sang it.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Dunkaroos, Dunkaroos,
no.
Whatever's a dunk to do.
Can I tell you one more thing about Larry here? When you search Larry Tesler's name, because it's computer-related, it says people also search for Al Gore. Is that because, he invented the internet?
He invented the internet.
It says actually Al Gore and Steve Jobs.
You came here, but you may have actually been looking for Al Gore.
Right.
So
right,
if exactly. you were, here's a quick link.
Here's the other things that Al Gore invented. Yeah, exactly.
It's so weird seeing
if you could
those
choose
things pop
one,
up.
If you could choose one thing to
invent?
Be responsible for inventing, what would it be?
Man, that's incredible. That's a really tough question.
You have
question.
To think of it in terms of money, like the iPhone. But, like, I couldn't invent that. I'm not smart enough to do
well,
that.
Like, you could have invented, yeah. like, peanut butter, and then you'd still be a hero.
Post-its.
No,
like
that...
Romy and Michelle.
Yeah,
Post-its is a pretty good one. I was thinking something along, like, a stapler or, like, a glue stick or something like
but
that.
But it has
like,
to be something stick. You could invent.
Rubber
something,
cement.
Something so
What's
obscure.
What's with all these office supplies?
Because everyone,
everyone uses
them everywhere.
Staplers.
Or think of something like you call tissues Kleenex, no matter what brand it is. You need something that is everywhere and it seeps into everything.
I mean, someone
Starbucks.
Invented a paperclip. A paperclip.
I know.
And they make, I mean, how much money did he make off that?
Live off that forever.
That's amazing.
What about electricity?
That's too hard. I can't invent that.
Yeah, I mean,
I can't. No, it has to be something I can do.
Something that could
not
have been
scientist.
Like possibly I could have
yeah,
pulled off.
Yes.
You know? But yeah, that's a tough question.
Or the concept for a TV show, or a song. If you could go back in time
and pick a song
and
to be
pick
responsible
a song and pretend
for?
that was the one you invented, it would have to be a song that was a one-hit wonder that they play all the time, every single place.
Like Maneater.
That'd be.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
sure, Tom.
Like Maneater,
yeah,
Tom.
Like,
yes.
Like Maneater.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's my sum it up.
Okay, well,
you
good.
Guys are on the clock.
Well,
I'm out of here.
Bye,
I look
Tom.
At the CBA, and just I'm just amazed how the initial conversation of what we were talking about earlier in our show, and we were already having this, you know, this funny conversation about, you know, how this is being presented and how it's coming across and how the end how the NFL owners are presenting this thing very much in like the Democratic
we
debate.
We were saying it was like
yeah.
Bernie Sanders. Oh, we are going to move $2.5 billion to the 53rd man on the roster. These monies are not going to be allocated to starting quarterbacks, to primetime receivers and defensive ends. This money is going to the bottom of the roster.
But Bernie, what about all your
We are
million-
going to fix the economic and the trickle-down economics of the NFL.
What about all your billions, your million-dollar houses? What
You're
about this?
To
what about
all this?
Oh, forgive me. Like many Vermonters, I do have three homes. I have a summer camp. And the NFL, Roger Goodell, is going to get this money down to the special teamers, to the backup tight ends, and to the Ugo Amadis of the world.
At a certain point, you start trailing into a JFK.
Yes, it quickly becomes
Ich bin Hein Berliner.
Mr. Gorbachev.
That's Reagan.
Oh, yeah. Shoot.
Whatever it was great. It was great. But that's.
Why does Rice play Texas?
I mean, come on. Just the more information that we get about this, you can definitely understand why the owners are trying to push this
yeah,
so
they are.
Hard.
And Stacey brings up a good point about the players being visible to the fans.
Yeah.
And the owners are invisible. How many owners do you think the average fan could name?
Well, there's Jerry Jones. I think any fan could name.
Right. I mean, there's about...
But like five, honestly.
The average fan,
the
maybe
average fan,
10?
I don't even think 10. The average sports fan, 10. The like casual football watcher, the average fan.
Anybody who cares...
Grading on a curve.
People who care about the CBA. That's actually probably a hardcore NFL fan.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
Well, I think that's what goes in their benefit is... that the owners, despite being incredibly powerful people, many of them like billionaires, they're mostly invisible.
Right.
And I think, first of all, a lot of power allows you to be invisible, but also it's harder to put blame on you. And a lot of that stuff's complicated, right? It's complicated for me, too, as someone who covers the league, to understand how owners garner all their money, and it's not like this mom and pop shop that they started, you know, maybe originally 3 generations ago, but for the most part, it's like taxpayers subsidizing a big part of a stadium. And so I think it's easier for people to see a very visible part of the CBA deal, which is the players, and say, either, you know, there are some people that feel like you are totally right, I absolutely agree with you, and then there's a percentage of fans that say you're being selfish, just get this done.
I bet I could name almost every owner.
Yeah, but Tom,
Kraft,
you're a sports radio
Wilson,
host. You're done. You did it.
Who's the Jets owner?
You did
Johnson.
It.
Woody Johnson.
It's his brother.
The
now.
Pegula family.
How about
they own the Bills now.
And the Sabres.
Okay, Stephen Ross still own the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Bisciotti owns the Ravens, the Rooneys, the Haslams, the Browns. Who's the guy in Houston that Dwayne Brown hates? McClain.
The Dwayne Brown
McNair. He hates him, doesn't he?
It's McNair. John McClain.
Yeah,
who do we have?
McNair.
Hey, Jake, who do we have for our free agent profile tomorrow?
We have...
Spanos?
Let me give you a guess. Who do you think the number one free agent the Seahawks need to retain is? Who do we think that's going to be?
Luke Wilson.
Boy, hard to say.
No, not Luke Wilson.
Russell Wilson.
No, they got him under contract.
The Wilson sisters.
Stacy, no, no.
Jake, is it Jadeveon Clowney?
Yes, it
I
is
did it.
Jadeveon Clowney.
I
we
did
will
it.
Have our reasoning for why that guy is our number one Seahawk free agent they need to retain.
Tomorrow on Tom, Jake, and Stacy. 710 ESPN Seattle.